Hey everybody, can you believe it's F This Movie time again? My name is Patrick, and I'm joined tonight once again by Mr. Mike Pomero. How are you, sir?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Good. Like I said, you're listening to F This Movie, fthismovie.blogspot.com, fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, or listen to us on DVD Verdict at dvdverdictpresents.com. I gotta get all that stuff out of the way up front, because I always forget if I don't. Mm-hmm. So that makes the first 34 seconds of this podcast boring as shit. So tonight we're talking about Minority Report, or Minority Report, depending on how you say it. I haven't decided how I'm going to say it on the show yet.
You got right into that, though.
Yeah, well, we're going to go back and talk about other stuff, but...
No, I know, but normally...
I take 15 minutes before mm-hmm. I even say what we're talking about. Well, right. Yeah, okay, but now we're going to go back, see... Because usually I ask, like, hey, well, have you seen anything good lately? Mm-hmm. And I'm still going to do that, but not yet. Because first, I feel like we should talk about, this week has been big for trailers. A lot of big trailers came out this week, and I was wondering if you had watched any of them. The Your Highness Red Band trailer came out.
Correct.
Green Lantern trailer came out. Mm-hmm, Cowboys mm-hmm. versus Aliens. Or Cowboys and Aliens, not Cowboys versus Aliens. Sorry, Monsters versus Aliens. Cowboys and Aliens trailer came out. Am I forgetting any? Red Riding Hood, but I didn't even watch that because fuck Catherine Hardwick.
Neither did I. Did you see the... Wasn't there a Cars 2 teaser trailer?
I will not be watching that either.
Okay.
I didn't really like Cars 1.
Neither did I.
So have you watched all of those trailers?
Yes. Well, I did not watch Cars or
Red Riding Hood. Well, right. But the ones that I mentioned?
I did not see Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh.
So this is... I've wasted a lot of your time.
Yeah, no, it's just self-destructing.
Alrighty, so
right now, as we speak. So let's talk about the Green Lantern trailer and the Your Highness trailer.
Yeah, what did you think? I should probably tell you, no, I didn't see the Your Highness trailer yet.
What the fuck is going
on? I saw Green Lantern. We can talk about that.
All right. You haven't seen the Your Highness trailer?
No. My problem is at work is when I've had time, when I've actually had time to watch these things at work.
Yeah.
And my computer at work doesn't... allow me to watch video. So
oh, all right, that would be
so
a problem.
Right, so I was able to squeeze in Green Lantern last okay. night, but that's all I've seen.
I don't know how I feel about Your Highness. Like, the jokes aren't funny, but I'm excited at the prospect of, like, this dumb fantasy comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there
is that, have you been clamoring for a fantasy
comedy? No, not really, but I'm interested in the prospect of one.
Okay.
And there are shots of Natalie Portman disrobing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you okay. seen those pictures already?
No, at okay. Free Nude Celebs with a Z. I've not caught those yet.
With a Z.
With a Z.
Oh, that's what makes it classy. all right, so Green Lantern, where no one shows their butt.
No.
What is your feeling about the Green Lantern trailer, sir?
Hold on, back up. Does she show her butt in the trailer?
Yeah.
The Red Band trailer?
Yeah. So you haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, I thought you were joking about how you haven't seen it at Free Nude. I thought that was like sarcasm. Like,
no.
You had seen it at Free Nude Celebs.
No.
She's wearing a thong.
Okay, still.
But yeah. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
So that, I think, is going to sell tickets right there. So I think they were smart to include that.
Yeah. Because I don't know why we're still recording and watching that trailer. The Green Lantern trailer, I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And but... I'm holding out hope. Green Lantern is actually a very cool character. They could do a lot of cool things with him. So I'm hoping they do, but the trailer doesn't give me a whole lot of hope.
No, I'm not the world's biggest Green Lantern fan, but that's I say that not because I've been exposed to a lot and not liked it. I say that because I haven't actually been exposed to that much Green Lantern.
Right.
I know there's like an insane mythology and there's so much going on. I don't really know any of it. I know him from like Justice League and that's about it. So I'm certainly interested in the movie, and what I've read is that, you know, it's going to have, like, tremendous scope, mm-hmm. but the trailer right. to me looked like, someone saw Iron Man and said, well, let's do that, but with Blake Lively,
right.
which
right.
did not inspire confidence. And again, I just saw her in The Town, and she was actually really good in that movie, and I thought, well, I need to reevaluate my opinion, but she's not good in the Green Lantern trailer.
No.
And the humor is lame,
mm-hmm.
I thought. And the special effects
are... I was just going to say the special effects are a little underwhelming
right,
as well.
Right, but, you know, we're half a year out, so
true.
I'm assuming they're still putting the finishing touches on those.
Right. I do like Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I do too.
So
especially as Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Right.
And you heard they're calling the sequel just The Wolverine.
The Wolverine, yes. I was wondering what your take was on that.
You know, I don't
What if they had taken out the and just named it Wolverine? Would that have...
Yeah, I would actually be okay with that. I mean, really, that's what the first movie should have been called. But, you know, they had to say X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yes.
The first Avenger, Captain America. otherwise, we're not going to know who these people are.
Right.
So, I guess, I don't know, The Wolverine, though. Not a great title.
I agree.
But I'm fascinated by that movie, you know. I hope it's good.
We'll see. It can't be much worse.
No, it absolutely can't be worse. There's no way it's going to be worse. So it's November now, and, you know, October kind of beat the shit out of us. But during the month of October, we were doing horror movie podcasts, and, Mike, you and I did a podcast on all of the Saw movies.
Mm-hmm.
and in that podcast, our whole message was like, guys, wait, give Saw a chance, because it's not as horrible as you think. We weren't saying it's great, but it's not as horrible as its reputation would suggest,
correct,
right?
Correct.
And to celebrate watching the first six Saw movies and then recording a podcast about them, we went out to see Saw 3D when it was released. And since this is the first time you've been on the show since then, and really only the second podcast since October because we were so worn out, this is our first opportunity to talk about Saw 3D, and I feel we should address this. What was your reaction to Saw 3D?
Well, if I could simply say, about 10-15 minutes into the movie, Patrick turned to me and said, I think we need to do a podcast retracting everything we just said about the Saw movies.
That is right.
It was not good. It was one of the worst entries in the series. Talk about just ending with a thud.
Possibly the worst.
Yeah, maybe. Honestly.
I mean, you can make a case for some of the others, I guess, but I think the addition of the 3D somehow made this way worse, and also, perhaps, as embarrassing as it is to say, there was some, like, expectation level.
Well, there was, coming off of 6, which was probably the best, I think we both agree. They looked like they were heading in the right direction, they'd figured some things out.
And they spent 6 movies doing nothing but, like, building a mythology.
Right.
And so when you get to your last movie, it's like, you better pay all this off.
Yeah. Man, did they not.
No. They failed to stick the landing, and it is a terrible movie. Almost hilariously terrible. And really, it probably would have been completely hilariously terrible to us had we not just been so embarrassed about having gone on the fucking record as liking the Saw series. Like, we recorded it. We literally recorded that and put it out there for the world to hear.
And it took so much soul searching on our parts, actually. To come to that point.
Right, that wasn't an easy place to get to.
Where we finally could say out loud to the world, right, we kind of like the Saw movie.
Oh, and look, we just got fucked for it. So thanks a lot, a-holes.
We played a game, and we lost.
I had my rib cage torn open. Yeah. So anyway, now it's November on F This Movie, and we're doing this thing called Thanks Effing, where we've been writing lists of movies that we're thankful for, and Mike, you did one that's on the site, fthismovie.blogspot.com, and I was surprised that you said that you were thankful for Stigmata. Is it just that you're a Patricia Arquette?
I was going to say, it's Patricia Arquette.
Okay. Now, have you seen Prayer of the Roller Boys? She's also very good in that.
I have not yet.
And there could be a number 6 spot on your list.
I'm hoping it's on my Netflix queue.
Anyway, we had said on those posts, if you want to write into us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com and tell us movies that you are thankful for, we would read them on the show. So I'm going to try and read a couple now, sort of abridged versions. Steve, who is a very big supporter of F This Movie, and is very active on our Facebook page, and we appreciate it, wrote in, and Steve a long time ago requested us, to F The Big Lebowski, which has been, like, in the works almost since we started this podcast. We have not gotten around to it yet. I'm really hoping to get to it by the end of 2010, but that is the movie that Steve, says he is thankful for. Since you're asking for movies for which we are thankful, I'm putting it out there again. The Big fucking Lebowski. Absolute classic in my mind. I saw this at AMC with my buddy. We were driving around in my 1985 Voyager, waiting for the acid we had just taken to kick in. Maybe it's not fair to judge the quality of a movie while you are tripping balls, and I would say that you are wrong. It is arguably one of the best. All kidding aside, I've seen the movie probably about 20 times since that day, and every time I see it, I love it more. People rip on the dialogue that the swearing is just to cover up weak writing. Wrong. So that's really the movie that he is thankful for.
Do people complain about the dialogue?
I haven't heard a lot of people complain about the dialogue in that movie. I think that movie is sort of universally loved, but yeah. Maybe I am wrong. Father Greg Jones writes in, who he's a priest, writes in, so many movies. Growing up feeling like I would never fit in, I saw Bette Davis and now Voyager go from the ugly duckling to fabulous. Taught me that we just need to get through the shit. Later, I saw Bing Crosby and Going My Way and saw the role model I did not have at home. Surprise! Today I'm a priest who knows that our Creator loves us, so we should strive to be happy. Finally, an all-time favorite movie I'm thankful for, Love Actually.
Nice.
Reminds us of our greatest gift, our ability to love and to let others know that they are loved. So thank you very, very much, Father Greg.
Thank you, Father Greg.
Yeah, that's awesome. And last, we have John Petrilla, who writes in some long explanations of some movies that he's thankful for, and I won't read them all, but he writes in to say I'll just read the titles. The Usual Suspect. What's wrong with me? I don't know. The Usual Suspects, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Red Cliff International Edition, very specifically says International Edition, and WALL-E, and I'm going to read what he says about WALL-E. The most enjoyable movie I've ever seen by far. I remember sitting in the theater with my mouth and a huge grin for the first solid half hour, completely transported by just the sheer power of the visuals that Pixar does so ridiculously well. WALL-E's journey through space is an amazing distillation of that really cliche phrase I try not to use, movie magic, and reminded me what cinema is capable of in the hands of people who really know how to speak to the human love for exploration, adventure, and wonder. Likewise, the opening introduction to WALL-E's world, the silent tour of his home, did more to humanize a robot in 10 minutes than most movies do for their protagonists in 2 whole hours. The fact that Pixar was able to so perfectly sell a love story between not only robots, but robots who say almost no dialogue was just effing incredible. I had tears in my eyes by the end, first in sadness and then in joy, and my first reaction when the credits rolled was to give the friend I'd gone to see it with a huge hug. WALL-E made me simply euphoric in a way that few films have, and it'll always hold a special place in my heart. I'll stop now before I chuck on more superlative adjectives, even if WALL-E deserves them all.
That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think we should make this a WALL-E podcast and stop right now.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Take it easy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John. You did our job for us, and we're out. So, yeah, keep submitting movies that you are thankful for. That really raises the bar. You know, I haven't done my list yet, and now those Slacker. Emails have raised the bar. So,
have you started to think about your list?
I've thought about it, sure. Stigmata is number one. I'm thinking about putting WALL-E on there because I think I already have some thoughts on it. So we'll see. I don't know. But keep sending them in, fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Mike.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who lately.
F this British TV show?
Right, I know. I was hoping not to bring up TV show.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been watching.
Okay.
Lately.
Is it good?
Yeah. I started with the reboot, the 2005 reboot, Series 1.
Okay.
As they called it.
The Brits.
The Brits. Yeah. I liked it. I'm now into Series 2, three or four episodes into it. I think I like it better than the first series.
Do you like David Tennant better than Christopher Eccleston? How do you say his last name? I have avoided it my whole life.
I just always Eccleston was how I say.
Okay,
it. I could be completely wrong.
It needs to be in front of me, and I need to sit here and sound it out. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to lie. But
I think Eccleston is a very good doctor, but
yeah.
Tennant. All right, here's the thing.
Is he a better doctor than he is a Destro?
I would say yes. Okay. I would say yeah. I think he's a very good doctor. I think because I've also watched some of the Tom Baker Doctor Who's and a few of the older ones. I've seen four or five doctors, and there's always a tinge of humor to the doctor. And I don't think many of them have great comedic timing.
Okay.
So I think the comedy falls flat quite a bit, and David Tennant, to me, so far, is the best at delivering the comedy aspect, and so he's just therefore been pretty enjoyable. And I've really fallen hard for Billie Piper.
Okay.
To be honest. So she...
Are you going to seek out Confessions of a Call Girl or whatever?
I've sought out the scenes that I would really want to see.
Oh, okay. NudeCelebs.com or whatever?
Those are just stills.
Oh, got it.
So
I had to look. Went on the YouTube or what?
Metacafe.
Oh, I don't even... I mean, I know what that is, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah, they have adult content. So
awesome. This has just turned into a porn cast. So great.
But even besides being attracted to her, because in certain light, she's a little less attractive at times. But I think she... Any sort of emotional moments tend to involve her, and she really carries them, and I think she's very good.
And is she in the second series as well?
She is, and she's not in the third, and I don't know why.
She carries over from one to two.
Yes, she does.
So the doctor changes, but she doesn't.
Correct.
Got it.
At the end of spoilers, but at the end of the last episode, the last like minute of the last episode of the first series, he changes into a new doctor.
Got it.
And
that is spoiled for me.
It is, sorry.
That's okay. I would know that he was going to change going into season two anyway. Yes. Series two. Sorry.
But, yeah, outside
of the UK.
I've been, watching a lot of Doctor Who.
Yeah. No movies. You hate movies now?
I do. Okay. I hate the cinema.
Okay.
I saw Stigmata and thought, what's the point? Why continue?
Yeah, movies are done.
Right.
I'm thankful for you, Stigmata.
But let's turn to you. Have you seen anything good lately? Maybe on Netflix Instant? Or
Yeah, I see where you're going, motherfucker. And yeah, maybe I have. Maybe I watched a little movie called Gamer, and maybe I didn't hate it as much as I thought I might. Maybe I thought it was kind of cool. Listen, I know Gamer's not good, okay? Gamer, in case you don't know, is the non-crank movie from Brian Neveldine and Mark Taylor, who direct under the name Neveldine Taylor, which is awful, and please stop it. Just use your first fucking names, guys. They're making the new Ghost Rider movie. That's going to be crazy. So they've made two crank movies, and then Gamer. And Gamer is very derivative of a lot of other movies, including like Death Race 2000 and The Running Man, and even... that Bruce Willis movie that came out, Surrogates, mm-hmm. which I think Gamer was already, like, done by the time Surrogates came out. So they're certainly not ripping off Surrogates, but it just feels familiar if you've seen a lot of bad sci-fi, as I have. But I did not hate Gamer.
I haven't seen it. I can only have the trailer to go on. You just
set me up to look like an asshole.
I did. Because I look like an asshole for not actually watching movies for a movie podcast. But, it's just one of those trailers that... And I know it's unfair because I've seen plenty of great movies that have had shitty trailers and the other way around. But it's one of those trailers that I watch it and I just think, God, I've seen enough.
Yeah,
I don't
need
to...
Right. And honestly, I mean, that's a lot of the movie, too. Like, it opens with Marilyn Manson's cover of Sweet Dreams. Really, guys? It's 2010. I don't know if we should still be doing that. So that's bad. And again, it's derivative, but they're really good at filming action. You know, it's funny because on the last podcast, I went on and on about how much I hate Michael Bay. And somehow I can say, like, fuck Michael Bay, but Neveldine Taylor, yeah. And
well, you like crank movies, right?
I do like the crank movies. I guess the difference is that they know that they are ridiculous and that's even what they are sort of striving for. To go so far over the top that it's comical. Gamer does less of that, and that's why it's probably not as successful as the Crank movies, depending on your feelings about the Crank movies. But mm-hmm. Gamer is a little too straight-faced and probably could have known how ridiculous it was a little more.
Okay.
I like the central premise that we're using in the future. You know, it's a dystopian future, can you believe it? And they're using... convicted murderers and convicts as like
video game characters.
As video, right? That you actually are playing real people, and I think that's kind of interesting. The movie does very little to exploit that idea. But speaking of doing very little to exploit your ideas, let's talk about Minority Report. From 2002, Steven Spielberg's Minority Report, starring Mr. Thomas Maypother. here's the thing. For the most part, I like Minority Report. Okay? Uh-huh. Let me say that up front.
Okay.
Because for the next, like, 40 minutes or so, I'm going to sound like someone who doesn't really like Minority Report. Okay. what was your reaction when you rewatched Minority Report for this podcast?
I was, overall, I'd say really disappointed because when I saw it in the theater, I've seen it twice. Saw it in the theater.
Once in 2002 and once now?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Don't really know why I waited so long. But I did, whatever. So I saw it in the theater, really, really liked it. Thought okay. It was, you know, one of the better Spielberg movies I've seen in recent years. Just loved everything about it. Thought it was a great time. And I've had wonderful memories about the movie, or at least wonderful feelings toward the movie. And when I saw it this time around, my wife and I were doing something. So I didn't have time to watch the whole movie. I was like, I want to at least start Minority Report because I knew it was 2.5 hours. So we watched the first, like, 25 minutes and then stopped it. And it took everything I had to return to it.
Oh,
because
really?
Those first 25, I mean, not that it was bad, but I was really excited to watch the movie again. And then after watching the first 25 minutes, I was like, wow, I have very little desire to return to it. So, and obviously I did. I just was left feeling not a whole lot of anything. But other than, like I said, disappointment that it did not age well to me.
Okay.
Maybe age well. That makes it sound like it's dated or something. It just didn't. The excitement I had the first time watching it did not carry over.
Okay.
Like, upon multiple viewings, it just didn't work for me.
Well, and again, I don't
as much.
I don't think it's a bad movie necessarily. But
I don't either, and I too don't want to give the impression that
right.
I didn't like it. I found the first time seeing it something fresh and exciting about it, and none of that was there this time.
Okay, I think when I saw it the first time, I enjoyed it. You know, on the level of like sort of a futuristic action movie, and it was like kind of fun. But I think I was always left cold by the screenplay. The actual sort of science fiction elements of it, I don't think really work in terms of like the social criticism. Like, some of the futuristic stuff is neat, and it's a lot of like set pieces that work, maybe taken on their own. But I thought the overall sort of like crime story never really worked for me, and still doesn't.
You just didn't respond to it, or
yeah, I mean, okay. Even the first time I saw it, I. Especially the whole last half hour. See, it's interesting to me that you said, like, after the first 25 minutes, you didn't want to go back to it. Because I actually think, like, the first 45 minutes or so are really good. Up until you get to the point where, if you haven't seen Minority Report, you probably shouldn't listen. We're not going to spoil everything right away, but I don't even want to do a plot summary. Tom Cruise, it's, okay, here it goes. It's the future. They're in Washington. These three telepaths called precogs can see the future, and they can tell when somebody's going to be murdered. And so there's this new special division of the DC police force called Precrime, and they stop murders before they even occur. They arrest you for a murder you haven't committed yet. And then Tom Cruise, who's like the captain of the police force, is accused of, you know, a vision comes in that he's going to commit a murder, so he's accused of being a murderer, and he has to go on the run and find out what happened and clear his name and blah, blah, blah. But that first 45 minutes that sets all that up and that sends him off on the chase, I like, because it's got the cool, crazy car scene, and it's got him flying around on jetpacks, and, like, there's some neat stuff. And then he gets to that scene where he meets, like, the mother of Precrime, she discovered the telepaths, or...
She didn't create them.
Right.
I don't know.
That scene is terrible and stops the movie cold for me, and then it never quite recovers for me. That scene is bad in so many ways. She has to dump so much exposition.
Yeah, that's a
in
problem.
That one scene,
right?
And it's done through that cliche of like, I'm the crazy old lady working with my plants, and she kisses him at one point, and it's just there's a lot of bad choices that are made in the movie that frustrate me. But of course, this is a Steven Spielberg movie, so what would it be without a number of bad choices that frustrate me?
We'll get to that.
Yeah. So from there on, I'm kind of in and out of the movie. There's like another few set pieces that work. There's a set piece near the end where he kidnaps one of the precogs and is being chased, and she's telling him where to go based on what she sees happening. That's neat.
That's, you know,
it's
cool.
A neat way to do a chase scene. But unfortunately, you know, the movie introduces this idea of a society where you are arrested for something you haven't done, where you're put in jail for life. And it's not even jail. It's like you get this thing called a halo put on your head, and you basically are like comatose in these tubes, but then it's hinted at that your brain is very much active, that you're aware of a lot of things going on, but you know, can't move or speak. You're just a prisoner in your own body, essentially, for something that you haven't even done. And that's an interesting idea to me, but I don't think the movie is interested in exploring what that means.
It's not.
Okay.
It's not, because they introduce that pretty early on. Colin Farrell's character.
Right.
Does. And I, I took note of the same thing, that it really struck me, maybe more so this time than the last time, like, oh, that's really interesting, and they never explore it, or...
It's much more interested in being that sort of Hitchcock, innocent man, wrongly accused, on the run movie, which is fine. I like that, you know, it's doing that in sort of a futuristic setting, but to introduce such a sort of novel idea, and it's not Spielberg's idea, it's based on a Philip K. Dick story, like all science fiction movies, basically.
Yeah.
but it's way more interested in, like, Tom Cruise clearing his name than it is about the ramifications of this society. The resolution is downright terrible, and I always thought that. But again, it's a Spielberg movie, so the last half hour has to sort of kill everything that came before it.
I know.
You know, the 2000s, I think, are probably the most interesting decade for him. Like, I think he's done some really cool stuff in the 2000s and different stuff. Like, the 80s might have been, you know, that's when he ruled. Like, he right. was the 80s. The 90s, he kind of was coasting. I mean, he did some great movies in the 90s, but it was like, it's exactly what you expect from Steven Spielberg. Obviously, except for Schindler's List, which kind of threw everybody a curveball, but then suddenly that was exactly what you expected from Steven Spielberg. So now even when he kind of returns to that, it's like, well, yeah, he's the guy that did Schindler's List. But the 2000s, he went, you know, really kind of dark, and he started doing some new and interesting stuff. AI doesn't totally work, but it's interesting.
Very.
You know, Minority Report was a different kind of movie for him, and it's certainly well directed. I think where it fails is at a story level. War of the Worlds, Munich, Catch Me If You Can. You know, I think he's done a lot of good stuff that's not necessarily all entirely successful.
Terminal. When I think of him having a rough third act, I think of The Terminal.
Yeah.
Like, that's one that pops out in my head. Because I really do like The Terminal.
Okay.
I really like the first two-thirds of that
movie. I think I did too, but I haven't seen it since I saw it, you know. And that's not a movie that's particularly well-liked of his.
I know. You know, I know. I liked it, though.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds was that way with me. I really liked it.
War of the Worlds doesn't even have a third act. That's that movie's problem. Because, man, what a great... First act, the second act is like, okay, if you bounce back, I'll forgive all this Tim Robbins shit. But then it just ends. And what a disappointment, because there's a lot of great stuff in that movie.
Not to put you on the spot, but just off the top of your head, does Spielberg rank high for you as far as like your favorite directors?
No.
No?
Not at all. And that's not to say I don't like him or that I don't enjoy a lot of his movies, but when I'm thinking of my favorite directors, his name does not pop into my head. How about you?
Yes.
Okay.
For sure. Okay. And I don't disagree with anything you've said, but when I think about, you know, Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right. E.T. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Bam. That's insane.
I'm a big fan of Jurassic Park. I'm a big
Me
fan.
Too.
I'm a much bigger fan than you are of Saving Private Ryan. I'm a bigger fan than you are of Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Which
isn't to say I dislike either of those movies.
Right.
But I
love Catch Me If You Can. So yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Spielberg.
Yeah.
I would definitely say he's up there for me.
Thank God he did Saving Private Ryan. I honestly forgot, because earlier I was thinking about sort of this notion of breaking his career down into decades. And I thought, wow, the 90s really had to be the worst for him because I forgot about Saving Private Ryan, which makes sense. And I remembered The Lost World. And I was like, oh, so he started that decade with Hook and ended it on The Lost World. Like, fuck the 90s for Spielberg. But no, obviously Jurassic Park and Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan, all very good movies that came out. You know, Amistad, again, has some interesting stuff in it. Doesn't totally work. I appreciate the effort. But yeah, The Lost World is a movie I downright loathe. Even more so than Hook, I would say.
I'm also not a big fan of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Well, now, funny you should mention that. Yeah, no, that movie is awful.
It doesn't even feel like a Spielberg
movie. No, not at all. Anybody. But that's how Lost World felt to me.
Yeah, like, no, was I agree. Somebody
holding a gun to his head when he made this movie? He's making this by force. But back to Minority Report. Because again, while I won't say that it's a bad movie, I don't understand how it is really championed by some people as a masterpiece, including Roger Ebert.
I was just going to say Roger Ebert.
Who named it the best movie of 2002. Mm-hmm. Michael Phillips, before being summarily booted from at the movies, or before the show was shut down, named it one of his top 10 of the decade.
That's wild.
Yeah, and I can't get behind that.
No. You know what else I found, and I don't know that this is a criticism of Spielberg or Cruise or the story or what, but my daughter's 2.5 years old, and since she's been born, I've been the biggest pussy when it comes to like anything involving, you know, like children dying or being mm-hmm. abused.
Yeah,
like
no, I've been the same way.
Everything moves me.
Yeah.
To go back to Doctor Who in series one, there's an episode with where Billy Piper's character goes back in time to when her father was killed, and like Doctor Who choked me up. But like I felt nothing.
Oh, okay.
Minority Report.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it really struck me afterwards. Like I wonder why that didn't. Why you know a fucking commercial seems to choke me up now. But Minority Report.
I thought the scene near the end where Samantha Morton sort of describes.
And that
the kid's life.
That's great. And Tom Cruise, yeah, everybody's great in that scene. I agree. But for whatever reason, and then maybe that's just more, this is more about me or maybe how I was feeling at the time. But yeah, it just, and I was very surprised that I didn't really feel a whole hell of a lot of anything. But it's hard to follow Doctor Who.
So you brought up Tom Cruise. So let's talk about Tom Cruise.
Okay.
What are your feelings about Tom Cruise?
I'm a big fan of Tom Cruise.
Okay.
And in Ebert's review of Minority Report, he pointed out Tom Cruise is he's great because he's completely believable as the action star and completely believable in these, you know, emotional moments. I mean, he can emote with the best of them. And I totally buy him. I'm a big fan of Tom Cruise.
Yeah. How about yourself? I'm definitely not a Tom Cruise hater. I guess I would call myself a Tom Cruise fan.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me that there's so much hatred towards Tom Cruise, and I don't exactly know where it comes from.
Did you not see him jump on a couch? Well, that's apparently where it
right, and I feel like
started.
Right. See, I feel like there was hatred for Tom Cruise before then, but yeah, certainly that was the, you know, if you'll excuse the pun, jumping off point, and now it's like everybody hates him. And honestly, his career has kind of shit the bed ever since then.
Yeah.
Because he was such an interesting guy. I say the word interesting so much, I got to think of other words. Help me out. Find new words for me to say.
That'll be interesting.
His career was neat because he was such a good, like he's great at being a movie star.
Yes.
Whether or not he's a good actor is almost beside the point because he's a great movie star.
But I think he is a good actor.
Yeah. I guess, but I don't even care because he's such a good movie star. Okay. Like, he would choose really smart projects and always work with good directors and pick the right stuff for him. You know, I mean, he's a guy who's worked with Scorsese,
Spielberg obviously,
Stanley Kubrick, Michael Mann,
Paul Thomas Anderson,
Brian De Palma. I mean, he's done a lot of shit. And, what I like about Tom Cruise, up to a certain point, is, like, even if a movie isn't totally going to work, you can physically feel him, like, dragging it towards the finish line.
Yeah.
Like, he makes a movie work through the sheer weight of his own will, you know? Like, he wills a movie to succeed, and I think that's great and fascinating to watch. A movie like The Last Samurai, like, it's not that great, but, like, he drags it to succeeding just enough where you're like, okay, I get it. But then ever since the couch thing, it's been, like, Lions for Lambs and Valkyrie and even Night and Day, his career has taken...
Yeah, it threw him off that track.
An unfortunate turn. Because, again, in the 2000s, like Spielberg, I think he was doing better stuff. He was taking new chances. 99, it sort of started with Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut. It was like, I liked that he was willing to play off of his... image in both of those movies as this slick, smiling, charming, likable guy. And in both movies, it's like there's way more going on, obviously, beneath that. And I like that he was willing to exploit his sort of movie star persona. And so I think he's totally serviceable in Minority Report. I don't know that he necessarily elevates the material from a dramatic standpoint, but, you know, he's a guy... that you want to follow, you want to go with him, and as Ebert pointed out, and as you pointed out, like, his physicality certainly sells a lot of the special effects and the stunts. I really think the special effects in the movie are really cool.
Yeah.
I think they're really good, because they don't look super computer-generated.
They don't. They almost blend, they just, it's not... You know, the Star Wars prequels were, you know...
You're watching cartoons.
Correct, yeah.
Right. Even the scene where they're flying around in the jetpacks, I mean, you could tell that it's real actors flying on wires, you know, and they've done some, obviously, digital enhancements, but, like, I think of the Quidditch scene in the first Harry Potter movie, or the Neo versus all the...
Oh, yeah, I know.
The Burly Brawl, I think they call it, in the second Matrix movie, where it just, it becomes this awful cartoon. And, you know, I think that scene could have gone that way, but I think Spielberg kind of grounds it. So I really like the effects, and I like Tom Cruise in it. And I hate to name names here, but one of the things I could never get past in Minority Report, from the first time I saw it to even this most recent viewing, the actress who plays his wife, whose name is Catherine Morris... And I didn't know it, and I had to look it up. And she's on Cold Case now, which is apparently a show that a lot of people watch or watched. It might have been canceled. I don't know. She sucks the air out of every scene she's in for me.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't have that reaction with her. The person I had the hardest time with is Colin Farrell, personally.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought he was way below... what he normally gives.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I just said it again. Based on what?
What do you mean? I mean, his performance, I thought, was not comical, but just what you would expect. And not from him. I mean, like, what you would expect maybe Joe Blow had a performance, you know, like Joe Blow picks up that script. Decides to play that character a certain way, and I feel Colin Farrell played it that the exact same way. Does that make
making any sense? Yeah, no, I think I get it.
Like there was nothing standout about it to me. It felt like a very average performance that could have been given by an average actor. So I'm watching it with my wife, and I didn't express any of this, and she turned to me and said, I really don't like Colin Farrell in this movie. She's like, I don't think he's very good. And I had the exact same reaction. I
actually have kind of come around on him in that movie, because when I saw it, I went into it knowing with the knowledge that it was supposed to be Matt Damon.
Mm-hmm.
And that fell through maybe because of like Ocean's 11. I don't know if that's right, but there was some conflict and Matt Damon couldn't do it. And obviously I think Matt Damon would have been better in the part.
Correct.
I think he would have been better. But when I saw it, I resented it being Colin Farrell, not because I'm such a team Matt Damon, but because this was sort of around the time where Colin Farrell was being forced down our throats as a movie star.
Yes.
he was the Sam Worthington of his day. Like, you're going to like this guy. He's a fucking movie star. Like, no. We got to see him do something first. All right. No, he's a movie star.
You just compared him to Sam Worthington.
Yeah. Well, he's another one of these guys. Matthew McConaughey was another one. Just like, he's a fucking movie star. Well, let me decide if that is right. So I was sort of indifferent towards him or possibly even resistant to him. But watching it again, I actually do kind of like him in the part. There's times where I feel like he's acting in a different movie than everybody else. And honestly, some of it may be the character.
Right. I agree. But I would hope, you know, maybe I bought into the whole he's a movie star, damn it, propaganda. But, then I would hope that just by him being Colin Farrell.
That wasn't, by the way, I didn't come around on him being a movie star till SWAT. I was like, SWAT, right. You sold, and then The Recruit. I was like, yes, you held your own against Al Pacino in a movie I'm forgetting as I watch. But SWAT was the one that really sold me.
Agreed.
Colin Farrell. I like the character, actually, because he's really the only one in the movie that at any point, there's a lot of bad stuff they do with the character, like his whole religious thing and... his last scene, he's asked to do something that I really hate every time I see it. It involves the thing around his neck. It's terrible. but he's the only character in the movie that even sort of addresses, like, how do we know what we're doing is right?
Right.
And so I that wins some points. Like I said, maybe it's just the character.
Did you see him that I'm punch responding to his own hand when... Tom Cruise got away.
I don't know. I buy no, him in part. I think
I'm not trying to talk you out of it.
I know.
He really did not. I mean, was distractingly mediocre.
Okay.
For me.
Interesting. There it is again. I feel like he's.
New drinking game, by the way. New after this movie drinking.
Yeah. Right. Great. Everybody's already dead of alcohol poisoning. I feel like he is a guy who's good at his job, and I think. He sells me as sort of being, well, that's a problem too. Now I'm contradicting myself because on the one hand, he's sort of relentless in his pursuit of Tom Cruise, but on the other, he's the only one who has doubts about whether or not that pursuit is right, you know?
Right.
So that doesn't quite gel for me that he's these two people, but whatever. I just appreciate the fact that he's the only one saying, how do we know this is foolproof? However... As we get into the climax of the movie, and again, major spoilers for Minority Report from here on out. Obviously, you've probably seen it if you're listening. If you haven't, turn it off at this point, because we're going to talk about the ending and some other things that come up. So right before his last scene, which owes a great deal to L.A. Confidential, including the identity of the villain and also the way that Colin Farrell is dealt with, he... goes on a whole explanation of these echoes and how a murder could be, how you could get away with a murder in the era of pre-crime. Which, by the way, if I could just for a second, I hate the word pre-crime,
but that's what it is.
I understand. We gave so much shit to James Cameron. I mean, and deservedly so for Unobtainium, right? Like that's fucking ridiculous. It is a real thing that, correct. Like, scientists do use that term. I still, if I'm James Cameron, I'm inventing something. Make something up. Call it solarium, whatever you want. I don't care.
Interestingarium.
Exactly. Make it anything but unobtainium. Come on. So we give him all this shit, but somehow pre-crime gets a pass. Pre-crime.
Because that's what it is. I mean, it's...
It's still, it's like it so basic. It's so... Pre-crime. I work in pre-crime. I don't know. I don't have a better suggestion, and you're right. That does describe what it is, right?
I think if pre-crime existed today, so something like that, we had pre-cogs, you could, you know, see the future, I think they would call it something like pre-crime or
maybe
something similar to it.
It's just, it seems so simplistic. And also, I don't remember the point I was getting to. Oh, I kind of do. Part of my problem with the movie is that they try so hard to explain everything almost to the, definitely to the movie's detriment, but like, at one point somebody says, well, why can't precogs see rape? Why can't they see, I forget what else. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Other crimes, basically. Why can't they see other crimes? And, you know, because of the violent nature of murder or something. Like, what? That, what is that? That doesn't mean anything.
So it's the explanation you have a problem with.
Yeah, I almost feel like they would have been better off not explaining it. Or just have the guy say, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why they only see murder, but that's what they see. So that's the crime we're able to stop. Because to try and invent this, well, because of the violent nature of the crime. No, fuck that. Fuck that. There's so much in the movie that they really try and explain the world that you're living in, and I wish that it would have had a little more faith in the audience to interpret certain things, pick things up from details, because there are a lot of scenes that are really great where it's just the billboards that talk to you and the cereal boxes moving, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily call a ton of attention to it. It just sort of puts you in this world and expects you to keep up. And that aspect of it I like, but then every once in a while they got to stop and explain all this shit. So what I was getting to was, here's an example of sort of the bad writing in Minority Report. Colin Farrell's last scene, he explains how somebody could get away with a murder, right? And then he is, spoilers for Minority Report, killed and knocked out of the movie. And then we get the last half hour of the movie, which is a disaster. Tom Cruise is put in prison. We've lost our hero, which could be interesting. In a different movie, but isn't in this one. Partially because the movie is left on the shoulders of Catherine Morris, who is the whitest, most vanilla actress I've ever seen, and also partially because what happens from there on out is disastrous, including a 10-minute sequence where Tom Cruise then explains, once he's, you know, busted out of jail, where he explains exactly how Max von Sydow gets away with it. But we already heard that whole speech. Exactly. Why are we being told this again?
Right.
That's it. It's one of those things that just strikes me as that the movie is a bigger mess than is ever acknowledged.
Well, I think you said it. I don't think the movie has faith in its audience.
No. Though. And again, there's a lot of neat set pieces, but everything between the set pieces is sort of forgettable. And at times, the set pieces make it feel like completely episodic. You could break the movie down into these chunks, and like some of them just don't work. The whole sequence with Peter Stormare, where he's getting his eyeballs replaced, like that, it doesn't work. Hey, and then I'm there's the bad scene where he's chasing his eyeballs, because this movie has a lot of like lame humor in
it? I was just gonna get to that. The Spielberg humor, which I like in a lot of his movies. I feel like there's a specific type of humor that makes your way into his movies, and I think it often works, but it does not at all.
Okay.
In Minority Report tonight.
No. There's all these, and maybe I can't identify like a Spielberg humor.
I feel like all of his movies have a lot of his movies, like to take Jaws, there's just the right amount of humor.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that none of his movies have humor. I just don't know that I could identify what that humor is.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Well, if I were better at articulating anything, I'd maybe.
No, Jaws has just the right amount, and it's always really funny, and it's always just this side of like being kind of dark.
Yeah,
you know, which is great, and I think that's some of what he's trying for in Minority Report, like him chasing the eyeballs. He thinks is like, this is dark humor. But no, it's just lame.
Well, and the overhead shot of the spiders going through the apartment, there's a lot of attempts at humor.
That felt like a Michael Bay movie. The couple that's fighting, then they stop, and then as soon as the spiders are gone, they start again. That is straight out of fucking Transformers. I'm telling you. And there's another scene where
Michael Bay took all the wrong... Spielberg.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Where Tom Cruise breaks in through a window, I think post jetpack fight, and he interrupts a yoga class.
Yes, and he's and in a woman's sort of pose.
Like, right, and she's like bent in half doing yoga, and she walks over to him. Are you okay? And it's awful. It's awful, and it takes you out of the movie every time he tries to be funny.
Yes.
So the whole eyeball sequence doesn't work. I mean, the spider scene is neat, but calls attention to itself as a standalone sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
No, I agree. But overall, though, you like the special effects, correct?
Yeah,
I did too. I like that there's enough. It's not completely futuristic where they still live in homes that look like our homes, and
right,
you know what I mean. There was enough of that. In other words, I'm glad they didn't overwhelm us with.
Right. The future. Exactly. Everything's different. I mean, the cars is a little much. It's such a neat
scene.
Right. Like, I overlook it, but, like, why, you know, that's the one piece of infrastructure we've changed. Sideways cars and wacky curved highways. You know, one of my issues with the movie has always been, again, it's not really raising questions about sort of the morality or the social implications of something like pre-crime.
By the way, nobody says it like that. So when
they say it more than I say interesting on this fucking they podcast. They do. I swear every other word is pre-crime.
I agree, but I'm just saying that, sure, when you say it like that, it's...
Well, when you say anything like that, right, it's exactly. Douchey.
Anyway.
So even sort of the way that Tom Cruise is set up doesn't really point to a flaw in the system necessarily. It shows how one guy is sort of able to outsmart the system, but it doesn't really underline any fundamental flaw in the system. And I think that's a mistake. I think...
Wow, you're right. I didn't even... You're right. It just...
It doesn't suggest that the system is flawed in principle. It just shows that this one guy is able to figure out almost sort of a loophole. But that's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
And that always bothered me. When we get to the scene where he is perhaps going to kill Mike Binder, who he thinks murdered his son, watching the movie for the first time in 2002, I sat up. I was like, this could really go somewhere that I do not expect. And I always wished that they had sort of followed through on what that scene sets up. And again, that makes him guilty of murder, I guess. So I don't know where the movie goes from there. So in other words,
you wanted him to...
Get it to a place where that has to be dealt with. Not just, I'm being set up. Yeah. I'm being framed. This was faked. That's cheap.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's much more, you know, much more interesting movie we just described.
It's always bothered me that it sets up this great idea that, yeah, you hear that and you think, oh, that's fucked up in a lot of ways, you know, that you go to prison for life for something you don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the movie, they say, you know, they released everybody and the police kept their eye on them, which I guess is supposed to make us feel better. But in some cases, like Ari Gross at the beginning of the movie, right? They let that guy, he's in jail for life now as a murderer because he was going to stab his wife in a moment of passion because she finds out she's cheating on him and whatever. So he goes to jail. Now he's let go. So do the police need to watch him? Is that guy a murderer?
No.
Exactly. But the movie doesn't address that. It's not interested in asking that question. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
It's only set up as a crime of passion so that we get that ticking clock thing where it's like, oh, they only have 7 minutes. Are they going to get there in time?
Right.
Because after the fact, no one ever says, boy, if we had just waited 5 minutes... I mean, not us waited 5 minutes, like, and let him kill her or whatever, but, like, boy, if we had just showed up and talked him down, that man's not a murderer, right?
Correct.
But the movie doesn't do that.
No. And I guess that's why the police are just keeping an eye on some of the people they...
Which is so lame. Okay, so I read some stuff. I did try and prepare a little. See,
you do.
Preparation. 5 minutes. and it's a theory that I don't subscribe to, but... Somewhere on the interwebs, I read that the reason that the whole last, like, 20 minutes is so, particularly the last 5 minutes, why it's so relentlessly, like, upbeat, and they're back together, and pre-crime is over, and the wife is pregnant, and the precogs are living in the woods, and they're free and happy, and pre-crime is a thing of the past. It's suggested by someone... That is a fantasy of Tom Cruise in his comatose prison state.
How are we supposed to come up with that, though?
Right. Well, and I think I read it from more than one critic that they say, like, well, you can tell by just how ridiculously, like, optimistic that ending is, that Spielberg overdoes it so much to indicate that it's not real.
I'd like to believe that, but I don't for a second.
It's horseshit, yeah. Because, again, I read that going into the last half hour of the movie, and I watched it very closely, and I said, no, this is 100% in keeping with every Steven Spielberg movie ever made. This is the fucking birds flying at the end of Jurassic Park. I mean, this is what he does. So there's no way. It turns into Inception, just like, what's real and what's not? What indication is there that he doesn't get out of jail?
Right, exactly. I don't buy that for a second. That sounds like people who just want to make an excuse for Spielberg and want to believe that there's something else
going on there.
But
no. There's not. This is how he ends every movie.
It's not always a bad thing.
No, a lot of times it works, you know? And I don't even... That's not the shit that bothers me about Minority Report. Right. Those last 5 minutes, I don't care. It's everything that leads up to those last 5 minutes in terms of the Max von Sydow stuff and the speech on top of the building and the shooting himself and, oh, God, enough already. Like, can we come up with a villain that isn't just, like, the corporate boss? You know what I mean? Like, it's always... If there's an old man in charge, he's behind it, everyone. Guess what? Don't trust him. So that was such a disappointment to me because, again, if the movie's not going to work on the level of science fiction, and it doesn't quite, to me.
No, I agree.
It works, you know, as a futuristic movie, but not quite as, like, science fiction with ideas. At least it should work as, like, a really kick-ass mystery. But it doesn't because the resolution, I think, is such a disappointment. And... you're given the solution twice in very long speeches, first by Colin Farrell and then by Tom Cruise. So even as sort of a mystery, it disappoints.
I agree. So it's overall...
a masterpiece.
Yeah.
One of the best films of the decade.
Man, that is amazing. I didn't realize Michael Phillips
said
that.
And again, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in it. I don't...
There is.
I don't dislike the movie, but it's... not in my top five Spielberg movies. It's not even... maybe it's in my top five Spielberg movies for the decade, because he's probably only made five movies. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull would have to be in there, too.
Off the top of your head, can you name your top five?
Spielberg movies?
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah.
Shit. I mean, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Close Encounters?
Jaws again. I need to see Close Encounters again. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Okay.
So while I think in theory that might be on there, I can't say for sure. I like Jurassic Park a lot.
I know you like Spielberg, so I don't know why I'm as upset as I am. But I really want you to like him.
He so rarely makes a movie that entirely succeeds for me.
Even lesser
filmmakers do make movies that they may aim lower. But they make movies that succeed entirely, and he so rarely does. You know, I feel like his last one to do that was Catch Me If You Can, which is lightweight Spielberg, I think, but works all the way through.
It does.
And before that, it was probably Jurassic Park.
What about Munich?
Before that,
what about Munich?
I do like Munich a real lot.
Me too.
And I need to see it again. You know, part of the problem is I've never felt compelled to watch Munich again.
Same here.
And that's... not necessarily,
bring an endorsement.
Right, but perhaps it's not the movie's fault. Maybe it's just mine.
And that was a movie that... Well, it's not the type of, like, I'm in the mood for Munich.
But it was, that is...
I thought it was very good.
It's very good, and it is a genuinely exciting, like, action movie. Yeah. It's weird to watch it on that level because of what's going on underneath it, so you don't want to just watch it as, like, escapist entertainment.
Right.
But you could, in theory, if you were able to divorce... all the politics from that movie. It's just an incredibly suspenseful, well-made movie that does have, like, a pretty dark, downbeat ending.
Yeah, it does.
For a Spielberg movie.
Right.
You know, and again, that's why the 2000s, I think, have been a better decade for him overall. What are your top five? I don't know. I named three, I think. I think E.T. would be in there.
Yeah. I would say,
And then probably Empire of the Sun.
I would go Jaws.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Close Encounters. Mm-hmm. E.T.
All right.
So
nothing post 1985. But no. He is one of your favorite directors.
fuck you. Catch me. I'll put Catch Me If You Can in there.
All right. I see what you did.
I'm a big fan of Munich. But like I said, I'm a big fan of Jurassic Park and Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
And Call Me Crazy People, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, I'm a big fan of.
Okay.
I like Last Crusade a lot. They're playing me. Like, those are more good movies than most filmmakers have.
Definitely.
And Jaws is a flat-out masterpiece.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm not saying Spielberg's bad or that I dislike him.
I'm being a baby.
I do think he's one of the best, and he's incredibly important, and he's so commercial and prolific, and he's made a huge impact. It's just, when I'm thinking of my favorite directors, I would name 10 before his name would even pop into my head. And I don't know why that is.
I won't put you on the spot now, but one day I'd love to know those 10.
Those 10?
Yes. All right.
Michael Bay. Do Neville Dean Taylor count as just 2 or 1? Just gonna say. I'll give him 2 spots. And then Spielberg. Wait, did I did this wrong. Shit. Who directed Stigmata? All right. Are we done with Minority Report?
Yes, please.
All right. It's a masterpiece. It's one of the best of the decade, everyone.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, thank you.
This was great.
This was awesome.
I'm using my most sarcastic voice. I love this.
I can't wait till the future when your wife is about to murder you and the pre-crime unit shows up, and then who's going to be...
She will leave me for Tom Cruise. She loves Tom Cruise. She'll be mad at me if I don't mention the fact that she fucking loves Tom Cruise.
She does love Tom Cruise.
Loves him.
I'm just saying, you make fun of pre-crime right now.
Yeah.
They're going to save your ass in the future.
You think? Why is she going to kill me? For not liking Minority Report?
For not liking Steven Spielberg.
Oh, she doesn't care. What? I mean, she likes Steven Spielberg, don't get me wrong.
No, I'm upset with her. What is...
No. She likes Steven Spielberg, but, you know, I don't know that he pops up in her top 10 either.
You know what I think this is? Because people care, and I'm going to go into my therapy thing.
Good.
In film school...
Here we go.
Spielberg is such a... It's so... uncool to like Spielberg, and it's just
bullshit.
It is such bullshit. I think that's what it stems from. I'm automatically get defensive because I had to defend myself immediately in film school because, you know, everybody's naming non-American directors,
right?
Because it was, and the one pass I got was Scorsese. Like, as far as American directors go, he was pretty good, but he's greatly influenced by you know the French New Wave and Italian neorealism, and, you know, I got that pounded into me. And Spielberg just made, you know, commercial bullshit dinosaur movies, and it drove me nuts because I could talk
about... That's not an art form.
Right, exactly.
You know, making a movie that is commercial but still appeals to everyone and pleases everyone. And yeah, he does make commercial movies, but obviously he's doing something. He's working things into his commercial movies.
Well, yeah, like, and I would always use Jaws as the example. Like,
right.
Like, to tell me that's some mindless
movie. Right.
Give me a break. That movie.
When he does make a mindless movie, you notice because you're like, what? This is horseshit. This is Hook. You know, this is mindless shit.
Yes, I agree.
I will say, though, before we wrap up, like, as douchey as that is, those film school idiots, because that is horrible. It's okay if you don't like Spielberg, but you can't not like him, like, just because he's successful.
Correct.
Or because you're somehow above it, because go fuck yourself. At least you went to film school with people that could name foreign directors, because if you sat in on a film school class right now, they would still give you shit about liking Steven Spielberg, I'm guessing, but they couldn't tell you one neorealist director. They couldn't name you one French New Wave director.
Who are they?
I don't know. Darren Aronofsky, David Fincher, Troy Duffy. No, I don't know for sure if they're into Troy Duffy, but like...
I think only Troy Duffy is into Troy Duffy.
I don't think that the new... You know, I know a couple people that are currently in film school, and they are constantly telling me about how little the people in their programs are interested in seeing movies.
That is unbelievable.
They're in film school. They don't want to see anything. What? I don't understand that. Scorsese, you know, obviously would be mentioned, I think, which is fine. You know, it's not even a knock on these directors, but, like, you know, movies go back further than 20 years.
Well, is it the Kevin, you know, Kevin Smith said, you know, he watches movies that were influenced by those great films and those great filmmakers. So why does he need to see the original?
Right. I don't need to. Here's the thing. I don't need to see Tango and Cash. I saw Cop Out.
Right.
So I'm good.
Exactly.
Thank you, Kevin Smith.
Thank you.
Looking forward to Red State, buddy. All right. Thanks, everybody. Email us the movies you're thankful for at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Email your diatribes against Steven Spielberg to Mike at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, you can email me at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time, guys.
Bye. Thank you.